I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
So, Robert, we had probably one of the biggest UFC events this past Saturday. So, my first question to you, was UFC 217 the best UFC pay-per-view you've personally ever seen?
I have a hard time placing that over UFC 100, but as far as, like, sort of unbelievability and making us all supposed experts look very stupid in the process, I don't think a card has ever quite done what that card did.
And Rick, same question to you.
Yeah, I was probably the most excited watching this, at least, than I have ever been watching another card. The only little road bump for me was Thompson Masvidal as far as excitement goes, but everything else was just blew me away, and I can't wait to get the poster for it.
Yeah, for sure. And like I've done a few times in the past, I gauge how things resonate as far as just the general public and casual fan by my wife. So I was covering the fight for MMA Torch on Saturday night, and we were just talking about, you know, who was fighting. And once she caught wind that St. Pierre was fighting, she was all in. She watched the entire main card with me. So just that fact alone tells me that, yeah, this card definitely had some drawing power, as well as, you know, I'm going to be really curious to see what the buys are for this one. But for my money, I mean, yeah, this was probably definitely the most exciting considering all of the upsets. And then 4 out of 5 finishes on the main card. Just, I mean, what more can you ask for? But anyway, let's set the stage here. So this is the Monday, November 6th edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. My name is Mike Grocki, and I'm joined by Robert Vallejos. And on short notice, thanks for joining us tonight, Rick. Rick Monzi is with us tonight. So a lot to talk about coming out of Saturday's UFC 217 card. So if you'd like to join us in the conversation tonight, you can do so by calling the show at 515-605-9345. Just remember to press 1, so this way I know that you want to join the show live. You can also email the show at mmalivecast@gmail.com. So UFC 217 main event, George St. Pierre submitted Michael Bisping via rear naked choke, 4 minutes, 23 seconds of round 3 to become the new UFC middleweight champion. Let me just say that I did pick GSP to win the fight in my prediction column for MMA Torch, but I did not expect the fight to play out the way it did. I also didn't expect GSP to look as good as he did physically. I mean, he looked like a solid middleweight fighter, and he came out, and he was ready to fight. So, Robert, I'm going to kick this one over to you to start. Give me your thoughts on the main event and a little bit, like, just what you thought of the way GSP looked, both physically and how aggressive he was.
Well, physically, I thought it was a little odd to see, you know, quote unquote, fat GSP out there. And not that he was out of shape by any means, but he's a thicker version of him than we're used to seeing. I think we got so conditioned to seeing such a lean athlete and that sort of being his signature that when I first saw him, I wasn't sure what to make of it. I wasn't sure if he was going to be, you know, this like super slow plodding older athlete that put on extra weight, or if he was still going to be very effective. Turns out he still was very effective. Even before the fight started, though, it was very odd to see GSP in the challenger role. Like I was wondering if for a minute I thought maybe was Bisping going to come out and then they're going to have the big hero's welcome for GSP. It was weird to see him come out without the gi on, without the whole GSP presentation that we got so used to for year after year after year. As far as the fight goes, I thought when the fight started, I thought GSP looked very good. There was a point, though, where he looked a little small out there and he looked like he might be winded in the second round, early in the third round. But once he caught him, obviously it was all over. But one thing that still seemed to be there is that GSP could still grab that takedown anytime that he wanted to. And that's something that we were so accustomed in the past when he would have these fights where it would seem like, you know, takedown, they would do their thing, they'd get stood back up, takedown again. It seemed like GSP was still able to do that on a much bigger opponent. So that really bodes well, I think, for his future if he chooses to stay at middleweight.
Yeah, that's where I was headed to next is, where does he go from here? I know Dana White has said that, you know, his next fight will be at middleweight defending the title against Bobby Knuckles. So, Rick, over to you. Where does GSP go from here? Does he stay middleweight? Does he go down to welterweight? And give us your thoughts on the way the fight went.
Well, on the roundtable for just the contributors and everybody else, I predicted GSP would win, but I remember writing that I thought it would be a boring five-round fight, and I was very happily disappointed with that. I thought that GSP looked great. I thought Bisping looked pretty good, too. I mean, and Robert was just talking about GSP grabbing that takedown, and he was able to do it very frequently, but I found it interesting that Bisping found a counter to that, which is just elbowing Bisping in the head as hard as he could and opening him up just like a horror movie. Like, I think that from this point on, like, Bobby Knuckles, who I do agree, I think he should fight next, should try to, if he can, put that same strategy into effect just by slicing the already paper-thin skin of Ric Flair-like paper-like thin skin of GSP's face and just working on it, because that was a sight to see right there. Just GSP standing up from a successful taking down and just being just gushing blood. That was almost too much to watch, but it was very impressive. And it was great to see GSP handle his striking very well. And, you know, that was Freddie Roach in the corner probably helped a little bit in that. I know he uses him frequently, but just having him there with him for the first time was great to see.
Yeah, Robert, do you think this was good for the UFC having GSP win the middleweight title?
I think it was. I don't think they would have gained much with Bisping continuing his title reign. Nothing against Bisping. I've talked the past few weeks about how good of a job he does in his role. But something, for the second time this year, it felt like order was kind of restored in the UFC, even if it was order restored to maybe 5 years ago. But UFC 214, when John Jones, you know, knocked out Cormier, kind of felt like, okay, you know, we're back to business as usual. And there was a kind of a similar feel to this, but I think this might have even resonated a little bit more. There wasn't a ton of buzz, I thought, going into this. But after the fact, you know, people heard, oh, GSP won, GSP's back, GSP's got a title. GSP is still a bit of a household name, as much of a household name as you could be before the Ronda Connor era. And look, they've got one of their all-time draws now as a championship holder. That's something that in this such a down year that the UFC's had, it's something they can finally hang their hat on and hopefully sustain some of the momentum regardless of who he fights next. I think it will be a massive fight if they choose to market it as such, which there's no reason why they shouldn't.
Yeah, I think as far as marketing and pay-per-view buys going forward, I think it was a good thing for the UFC. And you know what? It injects a little bit of new blood, you know, not old new blood, I guess I should say. And it definitely adds a little bit of excitement. I thought it was interesting, too. You know, we're so used to this day and age with the UFC, just the way post-fight interviews go with fighters calling other fighters out and I mean, just look what Covington did a few weeks ago. And just to see GSP be so gentlemanlike and gracious in his post-fight interview, it just reminded me, just kind of brought me back, six, seven, 8 years ago to and it just reminded me how good GSP was, even on the microphone. So, all right, guys, let's move on to the co-main event where TJ Dillashaw captured the bantamweight title with a second-round TKO of Cody Garbrandt. This was one of many fights I got wrong on Saturday night. Robert, what were your thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, this was an exciting atmosphere throughout. I thought this was really something, a sight to behold. Throughout the fight, I'm thinking in my head, okay, this is the coronation of Cody right here. Where everyone has sort of tabbed him to be maybe the next big star in the UFC, and it seemed like this was the time, the place, and the stage. And he had some swagger to him, and he was fighting a really great fight. But nobody should be necessarily shocked by the outcome. I picked Cody last week. Of all the results, that was the one that was so hard to truly handicap because TJ Dillashaw is a great fighter who's fought at the championship level in the past, so it shouldn't be that big of a shock. But it was unexpected, and again, it's that new blood argument. TJ Dillashaw is not a new fighter, and Cody Garbrandt is the new blood. But I think we had all kind of accepted that Cody was going to be on that perch for a while. I don't think anybody really saw him losing that title so soon. So I just thought it was fascinating. I thought everything around the fight was very fascinating. I said on Twitter that I love Cody Garbrandt, who he seems to be as a person, but I can't stand the whole team alpha male shtick and like the mama bear and her little cubs with Uriah Faber. So I thought it was a really cool narrative that played out over here. And I was very satisfied with everything I saw, even the post fight, where they gave each other respect, but then there still seemed to be a bit of a scrum between somebody in TJ's corner with somebody with Cody. So I thought everything was actually really well, came across really well here.
Yeah, Rick, what were your thoughts on this one?
I got this one completely wrong, too. I loved TJ when he beat Barao initially. I was all on the TJ bandwagon, but obviously Cody beating Cruz and everything, I thought is a foregone conclusion. He would just get past the tough test of TJ and then move on from there. But obviously that didn't happen. The second round was so exciting, just with TJ getting the upper hand at first and then finishing it up. And if they kept showing that exchange, the finish in slow motion, so all the different replays, and it was so just exciting with Cody throwing and then TJ just perfectly catching him with a hook. And I just, yeah, all the drama afterwards with people yelling at Cody Garbrandt that they're, this guy saying he's his brother, and Cody just almost going at and another fight starting. And I would like to see this rematch down the road. I know it's not going to be right away, but this is not the last time we've seen these two fight each other. It's kind of a perfect pairing.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to mention that as well. This is probably not the last time we see these two in the cage against each other. So there's a lot of talk. Like, I shouldn't say a lot of talk, but had the first round lasted, say, 10 seconds longer, there was a good chance that Garbrandt would still have his title. Any thought to that, Rick, as far as the way that round ended?
Yeah, 10 seconds more and Cody would have just finished TJ. Even TJ walking to his corner, he seemed to be, well, not flat-footed, he just seemed to barely be able to stand. But he got saved by the bell, like so many other fighters have, and he took advantage of it. I think it's more telling how he's able to recuperate in that minute he had in his corner and just refocus and finish the fight than it is how he almost got finished. That was incredible.
Yeah, and I don't remember if you answered the roundtable question on MMAtorch.com, but what were your thoughts on his call-out of Demetrius Johnson? Are you for that fight, or would you rather see him defend the bantamweight title?
I answered that I want TJ to fight him because I'm tired of seeing Mighty Mouse be the best fighter fighting against not people of his same standing. So I'm looking for Mighty Mouse, who's an elite fighter, to start fighting the elite. No disrespect to all of Mighty Mouse's other challengers. And so I'm all for him fighting TJ Dillashaw. I'm concerned about TJ going down a weight class. That's the only thing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so we would probably see TJ go down to 125, thus putting the brakes on the bantamweight division for the time being. last thing I want, though, I do want to see that fight, but I also don't want to see another interim belt for the bantamweight title. So, Robert, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm totally into the DJ-TJ fight now. I wasn't so much into it going into UFC 215. I thought the way it was all being handled, it really didn't seem quite worth it for DJ. Now it is. Now it would be. It's a true champion versus champion bout. And quite frankly, with both of these guys, there's not a ton I actually look forward to within their division, because I feel like we've already seen everything as it's currently constructed right now. So it makes sense for them to sort of to cross paths. But I'm also with you in that I don't want an interim belt. And you get the feeling that if you go interim belt in bantamweight, we're probably back in the Dominick Cruz era. And then who knows how that will all play out. And as good of a fighter as Dominick Cruz has been in the past, it can be very underwhelming with him on top.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how he does against Rivera. All right, in what was definitely the biggest upset of the night, according to the odds, Rose Namajunas finished off Joanna Jędrzejczyk in the first round to become the new women's strawweight champion. So since losing the title, Jędrzejczyk has said not to compare her to Ronda Rousey. But Rick, is it a fair comparison? And also give us your overall thoughts on the fight.
It's tough to say. I think in at least the weigh-in sense, where like Rose was very stoic and, just saying Lord's Prayer, as she said, kind of like Holly Holm just didn't sell anything as Ronda Rousey went after her verbally to psych herself up. Joanna was, that's what Joanna does as well. I think that's where some of the similarities came into my mind, at least. But as people, personality wise, Joanna and Ronda are very far apart. Joanna doesn't seem to have had the same sort of, I don't want to say pettiness, but somewhere along there as Ronda did. But yeah, I feel like that fight was probably my favorite fight of the night. I love Joanna Champion a lot, and I was all for her defending and moving on. But just seeing that upset like it was, and the Rose's reaction, it kind of gets you excited and reinvigorated as a fan to see someone win a title like that and just break down in tears and just be so happy. And the way that Rose, again, was so stoic and didn't sell anything, and how she just comes off kind of as a silent badass and to win the title. I think the UFC has got a star in the making right here, if not already. And Joanna, this fight, out of any other fight I've seen recently, I want to see rematch as soon as possible once they're both healed up.
Do you think she took Rose lightly?
Yes, I do. And I think that's where some of the comparisons are coming in, more than just the weigh-in and everything like that. Like where Ronda, I don't feel like considered Holly Holm a true threat. The thing with between Ronda and Holly is I feel like people felt more of a vindication when Holly lost and got knocked down in such a dramatic fashion, where I feel like people, fans, really feel bad for Joanna and want to see her come back and succeed, whereas Ronda had a lot of haters. I don't think Joanna has that many.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some truth to that. Robert, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, as far as the fight goes, there was a lot of shocking things that happened on Saturday night. This is the only thing that was truly earth-shattering, though, where of anything you said what could happen, I did not think that this was going to happen. The script was definitely the same as UFC 193 as far as how the presser went and how the results went. And similarly, where both Joanna and Ronda in their respective fights really couldn't seem to get out of the bricks, get out of first gear in the fight. Where I will say the clear and absolute difference is in the post fight. Initially the look on Joanna's face, she looked very devastated, understandably so. And I'm thinking, every time a champion loses or a longtime champ loses, I feel like we have such a low bar, the low bar of Ronda Rousey, to compare how they handle that loss, that's where we're going to it. Every other fighter in the UFC and everyone else in sports basically takes losses better than Ronda Rousey has taken her two losses. So I was glad to see that it didn't quite pan out the same way. As far as the new star, Namajunas, I think we all like Namajunas. Similar to Joanna, I think she's just going to be somebody that the people that are already watching continue to like. I've yet to see the UFC successfully promote a female that doesn't have blonde hair and blue eyes to any degree of success. So I don't see them doing anything with her. Not for lack of trying, just for lack of, that's not their straight model and what they do. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do that with her. They couldn't really do it with Ioana, who was super dominant. I don't know if they could do it with Nama Yunus.
Right. Jacek wasn't a big draw. I just think there's something about Rose that's different, though. That at least in my opinion, I don't know if she's more personable. I think she might be a little bit more grounded, but there's just something about her I think that people are going to gravitate towards. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense, and I don't disagree with you in that she's a very interesting and intriguing person. I don't know if the UFC will quite know have the mechanisms in place to really push her to that level. That's my only disagreement or contradiction there.
Yeah, I mean, but going back to the fight, Rose just pretty much destroyed her. I mean, I don't even think she took much damage, if any at all. And she got up from the first knockdown, which she was still definitely hurt from. And then that hook up the second time. And then I didn't see in the beginning. I was watching it live. I didn't see Ioana tapping. I thought it was a rough, stoppage. But then when they showed the replay, I saw her tapping. So, and this goes back to the gamblers out there. So whoever took Rose winning by submission, they kind of got screwed on their money there because Ioana did tap, but the official decision was a TKO. So I don't know if you guys follow that at all, but I found that very peculiar. Rick, any thoughts?
Yeah, and real quick,
yeah.
Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just going to say to the losers that are tweeting at Big John that they're angry that their gambling payments didn't pan out because of the decision, find something better to do.
Right. Robert, I wasn't one of those guys.
Good to know.
All right. Rick, anything to add?
Yeah, I got a real nitpicky thing. One thing that kind of annoyed me, and it has to do with after the fight, it was I the only one annoyed by how DC kept just shouting Rose Thug over and over and over again. I didn't count it, but it honestly felt like 14 times, like you said it. Like, I know they're going for, like, that epic moment where, like Mike Goldberg or Joe Rogan would have these big thing, vocals they would play over in the replays for future installments. I just don't think DC's screaming Rose Thug, like over and over. He still needs to like tweak some things to become the great commentator that he wants to be. But that was, I watched it again the second time and I was looking for the tap like you were saying, but I was just ignoring DC's commentary after that. I was so annoying.
Yeah, there were some tweets towards him as far as that, getting a little too celebratory, I guess, with Rose's win. I just took it as, I kind of view DC a little bit differently because he's been there. He's been in the cage. He's won fights like that. He's lost fights like that. So I think it was more or less just the fighter coming out in him and just being happy for, Rose winning the title. That's the way I took it. It didn't bother me at all, to be honest. Robert did... Did it bother you?
I don't know if it bothered me, but it definitely stood out where it was like, when you're rooting from the booth, it can come across in a negative way. I thought in general they had a bit of a rough night on commentary. And we've talked about in the past how Cormier, does a fairly decent job in the commentary booth. But like any sport, when you have a three-man booth, there's just not enough room and some weird stuff happens. We see it every week on Monday Night Raw. Part of that obviously is Booker T going off the deep end and Cormier didn't do that. Maybe if he tried that stick, we'll have a whole different show to talk about next time.
Right. All right, guys, we are late for our first break here. And when we come back, we do have a caller on hold I'd like to get to, and then we will finish up on the UFC 217 review.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
State your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan? Is it Ryan you said?
Yes, it is.
Thanks for calling, Ryan. What's on your mind tonight?
First question I have for you is I went to the Bellator show on Friday and met some of the big wigs like Scott Coker and Brian Vader, but I also met this person that really intrigued me named Front Row Brian. He supposedly is the mystery man of MMA and always sits in the front row for the big fights. Is he better source than, say, Dave Meltzer when it comes to getting the scoops, or have you not heard of this guy before?
I've heard of him. I don't know much about him. I don't know if Rick or Robert, maybe you have a little bit more information about him.
Yeah, he's like one of Chael Sonnen's like best friends, and he's actually been on Sonnen's podcast a few times. He does have a bit of insider knowledge if you follow him on his Twitter account. But he also has this like faux right-wing Donald Trump persona, which I don't know if it's legitimate or not, but it feels inauthentic enough that it's a bit annoying. And if you don't jive with him politically, it can be a little bit grating. He has predicted stuff that has come true. So there is that, but a guy like Meltzer has that sort of accountability as a journalist and, you know, past, you know, decades and decades of back issues to look at for information. Someone like Front Row Brian may be closer to people in the know, but I would not necessarily consider him a reliable source because what he says or what he prints, his job is not on the line. It's just a tweet he sends out, you know, here or there. So, you know, take what he says, you know, it could be legitimate, but I would sort of take it with a grain of salt, anything that he puts out there.
Yeah. Anything else for us, Ryan?
Oh, actually, he told me he had a high-paying job, but it was in pro wrestling, supposedly, which really confused me because he was listed as a member of, like, Pro Combat, which is the MMA portion, I guess, of that website.
Yeah, he is associated with them. I do know that for sure. He has actually wrote articles for them in the past.
Yeah. I have a question about the fight I went to. The canvas got really bloody, and it sort of surprised me that they didn't do a better job of, like, cleaning the canvas because it was, like, literally, like, blood all over the canvas. Does the Athletic Commission ever get on MMA for, like, having, like, and sanitary environment for the fighters?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I watched the fight, so I kind of know what you're talking about. But it isn't anything, at least from my perspective, that stood out any more than I've seen in the past. Even, you know, on Saturday's UFC card, the canvas got bloody. But no, I've never heard any issues as far as sanitation goes. Robert or Rick, have you?
No, I think the general assumption is that these people are tested. They do take blood tests. So
right.
the blood, while disgusting, would technically be safe. There was that UFC a couple of months ago where there was some human excrement on the canvas, which I thought would have been just uncomfortable to, you know, to wrestle in.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
My final question for you is actually on the George St. Pierre fight. I know it's the Vegas called that fight and got Pierre right. Is there any major fights that they got wrong recently that you know of?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the beginning. What was the question again?
On the Vegas odds, they got the St. Pierre fight correct. Are there any fights recently that were like major fights, like big money fights, that they got wrong and lost a lot of money on recently?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. You know, I didn't hear how they did over the weekend. Usually when big favorites come in, the bettors you tend to do well because a lot of times they're just taking a chance on a big favorite. So had a lot of people take in, you know, Rose and TJ. They probably did pretty well, but as far as how Vegas did overall, I don't have the numbers on that. Anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, basically I was basically just trying to figure out like if they've ever got any fights like wrong, like if you were a betting man, you were to probably pick Pierre, like if say Vegas was late, like picking him to win, because some people just go with who Vegas is saying is the win. Well, I didn't have to run any times, you know, when
right, the whole,
you know, someone got it wrong.
Right, but the whole point of Las Vegas and odds is to get action on both sides. They want even money coming in on both sides, so either way, they're going to win. So they're going to put odds out there that they think they're going to get split action on, and that's what they generally look for. Now, granted, there are going to be times when, you know, they do have it wrong. It happens a lot of times, you know, with point spreads in football and basketball games. But that being said, you wouldn't be seeing these ginormous casinos in Las Vegas if they were doing things incorrectly and getting things wrong. So for the most part, I would say they're just fine and getting the majority of these right. So, but thanks for calling, Ryan, and I hope you call again.
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
have a good night.
You too.
All right, guys, let's continue on down the card here. Okay, in the second fight on the main card, we had Stephen Thompson beating Jorge Masvidal by unanimous decision in what was probably the least exciting fight on the entire card, not let alone the main card. This was the only fight on the main card to go to the judges' scorecards. I thought they definitely got it right. I thought it was a clear decision for Wonder Boy. Robert, what did you think of Thompson's performance here?
Well, you know, you say boring, but the former point fighter in me just found that absolutely fascinating. But yeah, it was a difficult watch, and it is the I say the point fighting because it showed a bit of a lack of power with Wonder Boy. Whenever he was able to tag him so often, but not really do any damage with any of these blows. And it's not like Wonder Boy has no power, but it just really wasn't on display. I think between that, but this also burst the Masvidal bubble a little bit, where, you know, he's coming off of two losses, and it really seemed like the UFC was kind of trying to fast track him to get him to a Woodley fight to maybe make him as the champion. And if you actually look at his resume recently, it's good, but it's not super impressive. So I thought it was good for Wonderboy that he got the win, but with him getting the win, he's kind of in no man's land, because he would need a change at the top to really get a title shot, even though, you know, he's clearly a top 2 or 3 contender in that division.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about Wonder Boy's fights, but I mean, it's definitely, obviously, you know, people struggle with his style. But from what I took from this past Saturday's fight was, I guess, it kind of gave me a little bit different perspective on Woodley and just how good he is. Because, yeah, Masvidal didn't take a lot of damage. But he also didn't really do anything offensively either. So I thought it was a good fight for Thompson. He did what he had to do. He got the win, gets him one step closer to at least being a contender again. Rick, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, to steal from your live report, which I was reading as the fights were going on, that was a typical Wonder Boy fight, as you said, and I agreed with that completely. I think Masvidal, you know, in the first round, he was finding success with those leg kicks on Stephen Thompson's lead leg, and that was obviously bugging him. But he just – I don't know if there was enough time in 3 rounds to keep that going to success, or if he just – he seemed to abandon it a little bit. I found myself before this fight saying, man, I feel cheated as a fan. This isn't 5 rounds. Like, I would have gladly accepted this as a 5-round fight for a FS1 card or something like that. But after the 3rd round was over, I was so glad this was not a 5-round fight. And I felt like the only thing I didn't love was that it was on the main card of this awesome pay-per-view. If you'd have taken any of the prelim fights, except for the ones that ended erroneously and put it there, if you're lining this up like a wrestling pay-per-view, it made it flow a little bit better. But I was wanting to see five rounds before the fight. After the fight, I was happy we just got three.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with that. And in the main card opener, Paulo Costa had no problems with Johnny Hendricks, winning by TKO, 1 minute 23 seconds of round two. Rick, I'll start with you on this one. Is it time for Hendricks to either get cut from the UFC or just retire completely?
It's time for Johnny Hendricks to be another UFC fighter having trouble in Bellator. I think that Johnny Hendricks was his real win of the weekend was making weight. You could see how happy he was, and then he just went through the motions, getting just beat down by his opponent. Like, that was, you know, we all, once we saw them face to face in the weigh-ins, everybody, the ceremony of weigh-ins, they're like, oh no. And so, like, I was just happy Hendricks was happy. You know, he was shouting at the press, you know, I said this is misconstrued, I made weight, look, I have, you know, and he was all happy about that. It seemed like he was just more happy about making weight than the fight itself. And then once you saw the how it ended up happening, you're just like, I don't see him fighting. I think him and Lyoto Machida should have a middleweight retirement match, like, you know, have a wrestling stipulation attached to it, or loser goes to Bellator or something like right. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, and Costa was, I mean, he was throwing punches with bad intentions. Like, every punch he threw, it looked like he wanted to just punch a hole in a brick wall. I mean, just the power that guy has. And the size difference between the two was just staggering. Robert, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think the size difference was everything. As soon as this fight started, it just, even though you knew the smaller guy because he was the more recognizable fighter, it looked like something that shouldn't be sanctioned. I don't know that he necessarily needs to retire. I wish, like you kind of said, the loser goes to Bellator fight, I think, actually has some novelty to it, in that I don't know that his skills are so diminished. He's just not that good anymore. I know that's sort of a contradictory statement, but I think he could probably still fight. He just can't fight at the UFC level anymore. And the weight thing is interesting because he looks way too small to be fighting at middleweight, yet he struggles to make weight there. So it kind of mm-hmm. seems like maybe yep. this just isn't something for him anymore.
Yep. Yep, I agree. But I don't know if he – it looked like he was mad with the stoppage. Did you guys catch that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking in my head, I'm like, thank God the fight was stopped, because he was just going to take just more punishment. So I'm glad the fight was stopped. And, yeah, like Robert, like mm-hmm. you said, you know, he's kind of in between. Personally, I'm not interested to see him fight in UFC anymore. Would he have success in Bellator? I mean, with the recent run that these former UFC guys are on, I don't even know if he would have success there, to your point. So, all right, guys, let's look ahead to this weekend's UFC Fight Night 120 card. The event takes place in Norfolk, Virginia. In the main event, we have Dustin Poirier taking on Anthony Pettis. The early odds in this one has Pettis at minus 130 and Poirier plus 110. Rick, I'll start with you on this. How do you see this fight going, and who do you think wins?
I'm going to go with Poirier. I've gone with Pettis almost every fight. Then I haven't been disappointed all the time, but I'm just going to stop predicting that he's going to win. And if he does, great. You know, I'm happy about that. But I'm thinking that Poirier will be able to solve the Pettis problem puzzle and get a finish here.
And Robert.
Yeah, I'm in agreement here. Poirier is, you know, still a very good fighter. And look at that last fight with Eddie Alvarez, was a fun fight till it stopped. So, you know, he still looks great. I'm not buying into this narrative that Pettis is back after his last fight. I believe it was over Jim Miller. I'm not going to buy that, you know, now he's back. Yes, he's always been a great fighter, but I think he's one of those fighters that once he's lost a little bit of athleticism, that was a big edge that he had. And now that he doesn't have that, I think he's going to be easy pickings for Poirier.
Yeah, it's a clean sweep. I am going with Poirier in this one as well. All right, in the co-main event, Diego Sanchez takes on Matt Brown in what will be Brown's final fight. He will be retiring after Saturday night's fight. Robert, I'll start with you on this one. Brown comes into the fight as a 3-1 favorite, and the comeback on Sanchez is plus 245. Who do you see winning this fight?
Yeah, I see Brown winning this fight despite his skid. Diego Sanchez has been so wildly inconsistent over, you know, the past like 5 years or so, where there's times where he looks like the old Diego Sanchez and there's times where he looks like a really sharp fighter. Sometimes when we say he looks like the old Diego Sanchez, I think that just means a willingness to take blows without regard for anything else. And despite all of Matt Brown's losses, I feel like he could still fight. Whenever they were marketing this as the retirement fight, in my brain I kind of thought, wait, is Diego retiring? Could that seem like where we were headed for? I didn't even snap that. This should be, you know, you talked about the loser leaves town match. This should be a loser leaves town match right here.
You say that, but I honestly don't think Sanchez, I mean, they're going to have to, like, kick him out of the UFC before he retires. I mean, that guy just keeps
going. They're
going
to have to give him the Chuck Liddell deal where they pay him not to fight somehow.
Exactly.
But after, they're going to have to honor it for the rest of his life. That's the only way he'll ever not be fighting.
I do like Brown in this fight, but Sanchez, I don't know if you saw him fight Marcin Held. I mean, he looked great in that fight. So if he looks anything Ooh. Similar to that, I think Brown's got his hands full with this one. Rick, what do you think?
I'm going to be contrarian, and I'm going to go with Diego Sanchez, because as in wrestling, it's always good to retire on your back. That's what Bret Hart said, at least, I think. So I think that Matt Brown, you know, he's already got retirement in his mind, and I think that will be the mentality of that will kind of lead to him losing. He might go all out in the first round or two, but I don't know. I think Diego will pull this out. I mean, Marcin Held, like you said, he looked great, and then he lost to Ale Quinta, which is nothing against him at all. That's a decent loss right there. So I think Diego.
All right. Next we have Junior Albini taking on Andre Arlovski in a battle of heavyweights. I will go with Arlovski to pull off the upset in this one. Right now, Albini is minus 255 and Arlovski is plus 205. Rick, I'll start with you on this one. Who do you see winning it?
I'll be honest. When Junior Albini's name comes up, I have to look him up. I know I've seen him fight before, but I had to go back and take another gander. And I'm going to go with Junior right here. I think that Arlovski, his best days are behind him, obviously, and I think he's going to be a human punching bag in this fight. No disrespect to him, but his last five fights haven't really gone too well.
And Robert, before you answer with who's going to win, does Junior Albini have a Wikipedia page?
He does. So
okay.
I can't pick Arlovski based on that, but there may be an amendment because Timothy Johnson, who Albini fought at the Weidman-Gastelum card, is the only Albini opponent to have a Wikipedia page. So there may be some nuance there. I'm not sure. But because I can't stick to my rule, I'm going to pick Albini. I think Orlovsky's, late career resurgence is fully behind him now, and he's back in decline. So I'm going to pick Albini here, but without having a ton of knowledge, you know, about him, of course.
All right. Moving on, guys. Go ahead, Rick.
Can I ask Robert a question? What happens if Junior Albini does not have a picture on his Wikipedia page, which he does not? Does that kind of inch you a little bit closer to him not fully having a Wikipedia page?
No, because when you go through like fighter profiles, apparently having a Wikipedia picture, you have to really be like a grizzled vet to get on the to get a Wikipedia picture. The Creative Commons just aren't that friendly. So
fair enough.
All right, guys, moving on. In the bantamweight division, Rafael Assunção opens as a 3-1 favorite to beat Matthew Lopez. And honestly, I don't know much about Matthew Lopez. And I also thought Assunção lost his fight against Marlon Moraes. I don't know if you guys saw that fight. But either way, I'm going with Assunção in this one. Robert, we'll start with you. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I got Rafael Assunção here, too, just because of limited knowledge on Lopez. I can guarantee one thing, unless Lopez is this knockout artist, it'll be a very underwhelming fight, as most of the Asensio fights are.
Yeah, for sure. And Rick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going with Rafael as well. I mean, besides losing to TJ, he's either decision or split decision his way to a bunch of wins. And so I thought his last couple fights, like Robert said, were pretty underwhelming. So
yeah, they're not very exciting.
No.
And in the main card opener, fan favorite Joe Lozon makes the walk for the 41st time to take on Clay Guida, who fights for the 47th time. The odds on this one are pretty even, actually. Guida is minus 120, and Lozon is minus 110. Robert, who wins here?
I'm going to say Lozon. I was unaware that like Guida had even fought in the very recent future. He actually fought in June. But I'm going to take Lozon here. Lozon's always kind of that win one, lose one kind of guy, and he's coming off of a loss. So I'll pick Lozon here. But this is why we were talking off air. This fight is like a time machine. If we're going back 5 years, this is a great fight. It's just weird that it's happening now.
Yeah, and Rick, who do you see winning this one?
I'm going to go Joe Lozon just because when I met him, he's really, really cool. And every time I see him fight, I want him to win, even though it doesn't always work out. I didn't realize their records were that fast until you said it. My God.
Yeah, they've been around.
That's incredible. Yeah. Whoa. When you say it like that.
Yeah, and Joe Lozon, he does come across as being a really good guy. And I'm just not a fan of Clay Guida fights, so I don't care who Guida's fighting. I want him to lose every fight he's in. So I'm going to go with Lozon with those, with that hard-hitting analysis there. All right, guys, let's take another break here. And when we come back, we will play another round of Fact or Fiction.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, guys, I think by now you both know how to play the game. I will make a statement, and you will tell me if that statement is fact or fiction. Let's start with GSP versus Anderson Silva is the biggest missed opportunity ever for the UFC. Rick, is that fact or fiction?
That's fact, especially after seeing GSP fight in middleweight this weekend. I think that fight between him and Anderson Silva would have been incredible in their primes. But now it's just like many boxing fights that we've dreamed of and never got to see, where it's never going to happen. And if it does, it's a decade too late.
And Robert?
I'm going to say fiction. And I'm still in this from something that Todd Martin said on The Fix a couple weeks ago. The Fedor fights in the 2000s, any of those fights occurring in the UFC, I think would have been maybe the biggest fights ever in MMA and wouldn't have been toppled to very recently. Fedor Couture, which obviously nearly happened several times, or even Fedor Lesnar, I think would have been like the biggest box office that the UFC had ever done. But obviously the other one that people always think of is GSP and Silva. I do wonder if there was a window where we could have got GSP John Jones. I mean, excuse me, not GSP John Jones. Anderson Silva John Jones. I know there was some talk about that, but neither man was really willing to do it. That would have been interesting, maybe like 2010, 2011.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up some good points there, but I think you're wrong. I think that's a fact. All right, guys.
We'll find then.
MMA is still the fastest growing sport in the world, Robert. Is that fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction because I think it's all grown up now and they're not necessarily in a growth phase, although I don't know what would have replaced it, because you would think of maybe like soccer or something, but I think soccer is also grown up. So I'm going to say fiction, but not be able to provide a legitimate alternative.
And Rick?
I'm going to say fact. Until water polo starts picking up some steam, MMA is still growing leaps and bounds. And I think what will be the real determining factor is what television network they end up landing on when this deal with Fox is come through, and what's on the horizon for MMA.
Yeah, when I first kind of thought about this, my first instinct was, well, yeah, it's fact. It's like Rick said, like you said, it's grown leaps and bounds. But the more I thought about it, the more I started to think about it. And I kind of agree with Robert here with soccer. I mean, at least in the U.S., I think soccer is probably the fastest growing sport. Like, but you know, I'm going to lean on Robert's side with this one and say that that's fiction. But
1-1.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Brought up some good points too, Rick. All right. Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Edson Barboza will not happen at UFC 219. Robert, is that fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction just because I'm going to give Nurmagomedov the benefit of the doubt that one time he's going to have a fight scheduled to come through. I'll probably be wrong, but I'm going to say fiction for now.
And Rick, what do you think?
For the third time in a row, I'm going with fact. I think Khabib will not be able to fight for whatever reason. Something's going to happen. I'm pretty much accepted that because I try not to get excited about any of his prospect fights in the future. So, fact.
Yeah, I'm the same way. When I first heard the fight getting booked, I didn't get excited about it. I hope it happens, but I definitely don't have my hopes up for it. So I'm going to say that's fact as well. All right, let's go with the UFC regrets letting Gegard Mousasi walk. Robert, fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction. As good of a fighter as he is and as good as that addition he was to that division, it's not like they were just printing money off of his name. And as we've seen him in his last fight, he wasn't the most exciting guy in the world, even in the Bellator setting. So I don't think they're losing any sleep over him leaving.
And Rick, fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction as well. I think after he was when Gegard beat Chris Weidman and that fight was stopped prematurely, as some saw, he started complaining about how the UFC was marketing him. And he says, I can talk, I can win. You know, why doesn't UFC promote me? Then he goes to Bellator. And after his recent performance, I'm thinking Bellator's UFC is kind of happy with their decision and his decision because he seemed to be kind of on the complaining side. Like, other fighters have been in the past, and they don't have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah, and shame on me on this one, too, because I've been sitting on this statement for a few weeks here. Do you think, Robert, I'll start with you. Do you think this you would have changed your answer had I asked this, like, maybe the week after he signed with Bellator?
Not necessarily, because I just don't – I think the way that the UFC doesn't look at depth right now, like in a division, they look at the top end. They don't look at really filling it out. So I don't think they were ever that – you know, there was never a guy that you were going to jump in front of the fence to try to save. And so I don't think – it was shocking at the time, but I don't think the UFC really – ever thinks they made a big mistake with this one.
Yeah, like you said, I agree. Even if they think they did make a mistake, you'll never know it from them. So, Paulo Costa is the next big Brazilian star. Rick, is that fact or fiction?
I would say right now it's fiction, but it could very well be fact in the future. I just, for right now, he beat a former champion, yeah, but it was a former champion who went up a division and has seen his better days in the past. So let's see him go through a couple more guys before we proclaim him the next Brazilian star.
And Robert, to you.
Yeah, I'm just going to say sure. I'm not going to say fact or fiction because I think he very well could be, and he checks a lot of boxes, and he's a unique-looking dude when he's out there and someone that can really get excited. And his post-fight promo, he was really sort of angling for that role. So I think the potential's there, but it's just too soon to really make a judgment on it.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys here. I'm going to say it's fact for a lot of reasons, and some of them you touched on, Robert. I mean, I'd like to see him fight, you know, someone, you know, a little bit. I don't even know where Hendricks is ranked, and I'm not going to look it up right now, but I'd like to see a legitimate top 10 fighter for Costa in his next fight and see what happens there. But the guy has everything it takes, I think, to be a star. So I'm going to go with fact on this one. And let's go with Bellator main events should be 5 rounds. Rick, is that fact or fiction?
That is fact. I'm really glad you brought that up because when Gegard was fighting in this last fight, I was amazed it wasn't going to be 5 rounds. And then I heard Coker saying why he doesn't want to do 5-round main events quite yet if they're not title fights. I think the real reason is because in some cases he's got the Chael Sonnens and Tito Ortiz's of the world who he doesn't think could go five rounds. I mean, some of their three-round fights are barely passable. Some of these Bellator, you know, hiring these guys who are kind of past their prime, and he doesn't want to set that standard. But I think that it's just bizarre to have MMA main events happen that aren't five rounds, whether or not the title's at hand.
And Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that the momentum is headed that way, and they should be. The only argument against is exactly, you know, what he said with some, you know, Wanderlei Silva and Chael going for five rounds would have just been absolutely nauseating. But I think you need to have, as a promotion, if you're not having a title on the line, stuff some sort of differentiation of why the main event position matters. So I would like to see, and they do have some of those younger fun fighters, you know, the MVPs of the world and the Paul Daly's of the world and Rory McDonald, who I think we would all like to see in five round fights.
Yeah, and when I first came up with the statement, I thought it was a no brainer that it was fact, but actually, Rick, you bring up a lot of good points with just look at who Bellator is having in these main events. So while you swayed me a little bit, I'm still going to go with fact on that one. Impact will cease to be a wrestling promotion by the end of 2018. Rick, is that fact or fiction?
It's sad because I think it's fiction, but my first reaction was, God, I hope so. But then I like held back because anytime wrestlers get a paycheck, I'm happy. You know, if Impact went away, I think that'd be a bad thing for the sport. But I just, the one thing that I will say, I want to plug Wade Keller's. Wade Keller, he did a review recently on Bound for Glory on his daily Wade Keller podcast, which I listen to every day for the most part. And it was as close to Wade Keller's stand-up comedy as you're ever going to get. He just totally tore apart Global Force Wrestling, that pay-per-view. I mean, I've never heard him bash something as bad. I listened to this morning. I think it's if you're a PW Torch subscriber and you haven't listened to the Wade Keller installment, you need to listen to that one. And if you missed it, you need to go for it because it is hilarious.
Yeah, I'm going to
hated it so
much. I'm
going
to have to check that out. There's so much content to get to, but I'll definitely make a point to listen to it. Robert, what do you think?
I'm going to say fiction because it's impossible for Impact to die. I mean, think of everything the company goes through every year. They're on their deathbed. They've taken the Undertaker's gimmick. They are the dead man. They're, you know, what did you say? You can't kill what's already dead. That it should be their tagline. So yeah, Impact will never cease to exist.
All right, and the final one. The Undertaker will wrestle his last match at next year's WrestleMania, and the build starts at the 25th anniversary of Raw in January. Robert, fact or fiction?
Oh, man, it's probably fact, but I hope it's fiction. Just after what we saw last year at WrestleMania, the guy is done. He's done everything he needs to do. And what a crappy way for the company. I know all the stuff they take for pushing Roman, but you know his biggest accomplishment is supposed to be that he retired the Undertaker, but like nope, he just shows back up again in like 6 months.
But you're not supposed to remember that, Robert.
Yeah, I'm a wrestling fan, so supposedly I have the memory of a goldfish according to WWE.
Rick, what are your thoughts? Fact or fiction?
It's tough to say. I would like, you know, I'm still hoping that I don't know why, but the Undertaker Cena match at WrestleMania sounds like the two biggest stars of certain eras fighting each other. That's kind of what I want to see. I'm going to go with fiction for right now, but I don't know what's next for him because these past couple of WrestleManias, he's not the taker of the old. He is a taker that might injure himself or injure his opponent next time they get in the ring together.
Yeah, and for storyline purposes, I hope it's fiction. But like you said, you know, having one last almost like retirement match with, say, someone like Cena, I think there's going to be a lot of fan interest in that. And I just don't think the WWE can resist not putting that on. So, all right, guys, let's take our final break. And when we come back, we'll take an email question and then wrap up with some of the latest pro wrestling news.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, guys. We do have an email question here. It comes from Terry from Nashville, Tennessee. He asked, or he says, UFC 217 was bonkers. Those are his words, not mine. Of all the upsets, which one were you least surprised by, and which one were you most surprised by? We touched on it a little bit, but Rick, why don't you start us off?
Well, Terry, I think the most bonkers was Rose beating Joanna at champion. GSP and Bisping, we all kind of had an idea of what would happen in there as far as GSP winning, but we didn't know how, and we weren't going to be surprised if GSP lost. And TJ and Cody, you know, those pretty evenly matched. So I think Rose coming in as the underdog and just destroying Joanna champion was bonkers, as you said. Thanks, Terry.
And Robert.
Yeah, I'm almost in exact agreement with Rick here. The Nama Yunus decision, that's something that's going to resonate for a while. If Joanna was a bigger star, that would be like earth-shattering, you know, top of Sports Center news. And then the TJ-DJ one, I think that's one that was – it was hard to handicap last week. So, you know, now it's not that shocking that it went the other way that most of us thought it was going to go.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely Rose winning was the – most shocking for me. And like you said, considering how, like, when we were talking about this fight last week, we all kind of, all three of you, me and Sean, kind of just brushed it off like, yeah, it's a given that Joanna is going to win this fight. So definitely the biggest surprise there. And I would say I'm least surprised by GSP beating Bisping, just because, well, for one, I never thought Bisping was a solid middleweight champion to begin with. So I'm a little biased towards GSP in that regard. In just saying that I wasn't really the biggest Bisping fan. In fact, his entire career, I really wasn't a huge fan of his. So, all right, guys, let's move on to some pro wrestling news. Unbeknownst to me, actually, Chris Jericho's contract with the WWE expired, and in a bit of a surprise, which we just got done talking about, it was announced that he will take on Kenny Omega for Omega's IWGP U.S. Championship at Wrestle Kingdom in January. Robert, what do you make of this news?
Yeah, I did not think this was real whenever I woke up yesterday morning and saw this all over Twitter. I thought people were getting worked by some, you know, dubious website. I think this is great for New Japan. We've talked about it before. I'm not a New Japan World subscriber. But I do get to see most of their good main events end up somewhere on the internet, and I get to watch them if there's enough buzz, you know, from the Torch guys or from Meltzer. But I think this is such a brilliant strategy. Jericho's not a massive star, but he's one of the guys that you pencil in for WrestleMania. Okay, who's going to be the Jericho match this year? And with New Japan trying to really penetrate that American market, there's only so far you can go with a guy like Kenny Omega that's never been on the big stage, a guy like Cody Rhodes, who has been on the big stage but was a bit player and has, you know, obvious deficiencies. Chris Jericho is my son is a fan of Chris Jericho. So Chris Jericho resonates, you know, across the board. I'm interested in everything about this, except for the actual match, because I just don't think it's going to be very good. Jericho hasn't had blowaway matches in several years. He has good matches, but he doesn't have, you know, that work rate, you know, Japan match he was known for, you know, 15 years ago. And, you know, Omega just has these hour-long, you know, sort of virtuoso performances that people really get into. So I don't think the match will be great. But, I mean, on Twitter, the feud was great, you know, 2 weeks ago when nobody had any idea that Jericho would ever be involved in New Japan. So I think everything leading up to it is going to be good. And I think if this is going to be huge business for New Japan, what a boon for them.
Yeah, and when I first started seeing the tweets from Jericho, I thought it was just snarky Jericho, you know, just being, you know, himself and kind of just trying to stick it to Omega, you know, he's not in the big leagues, exactly what he was saying. I thought, yeah, I was definitely worked by his tweets, put it that way. Rick, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm excited about this. I think it's all good for New Japan. first Jericho, then Bryan Danielson. I think that Jericho will kind of open it up a little bit for other stars eventually when they get out of their contracts to look at New Japan as a serious alternative. Because here, United States, we got, you know, like we said, Impact, which we did a Fact of Friction, whether or not it'd still be even around. And then we got Ring of Honor. I mean, we got Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, but New Japan, especially New Japan America, is becoming a real competitor. And I think the match itself, if Jericho versus AJ Styles was any indication at WrestleMania, which in my opinion wasn't very good, was a template. I think that Jericho versus Omega will be a little underwhelming, but the hype going into it will be big enough to where people like me who aren't subscribers to their streaming service might either reconsider it or look into other methods of seeing it down the road. But I think this is good. I think once this happens, you know, Jericho, if he wins, he can go against Okada, or Omega and Okada can go against each other. And then once Daniel Bryan is free of his contract, he can consider New Japan as a source of income.
Yeah, I'm not a subscriber either, but I think the closer we get to January and just the hype surrounding it, there's a good chance I might be come January. Robert, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Do you think there was some sort of falling out with Vince McMahon and WWE? Or do you think this is just a mutual separation?
To read between the lines, I think the falling out was with Chris Jericho and Triple H, two guys who have had, you know, issues with each other, you know, for 15 years at this point. For those who don't know, and it's been all over the torch, I guess Jericho's got this cruise coming up that he's promoting. He wanted to get some, it's like a wrestling themed cruise, which sounds awesome, but he wanted to get some NXT talent on there. And, you know, Triple H rebuffed him. So it seemed like Jericho had to go to the independents to get that talent, and that might have been the source of the schism. Could be nothing, could be something, but that's what made this shocking, is because Jericho has been so adamant on his podcast over the years that, you know, before his recent run, of course, he's not a full-time wrestler. When he finds time to do wrestling or wants to do wrestling, he's in the WWE family. That's where he's going to go. He always said he didn't need to go sign autographs at an ROH show or appear at a TNA show. So for him to do this makes me think there must be some kind of, you know, legitimate bad blood between the sides, at least temporarily. If you do read Jericho's books, he's had several falling outs with Vince over the years, but there's never been a full divorce the way this feels like. So I'm actually very concerned that we might not see Jericho for a very long time within the WWE, and one more thing to consider, I know I'm going long here, is that Triple H has been sort of the bridge builder, at least that's how it's been presented to a lot of the guys that Vince has feuded with.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Part of why I think CM Punk might not ever come back in the fold, his issues are with Triple H. And so if you are on the wrong side of Triple H, I think that makes it more difficult to sort of re-enter the fold, unless bringing you in just means too much money to say no to.
Yeah, you bring up a lot of good points there. Rick, any thoughts?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, you know, in the long run, who's more – to bring up Robert's point, to evaluate it. Vince McMahon seems to actually be the ultimate forgiver in some ways. I mean, Macho Man's really one of the only wrestlers who has never been forgiven by Vince McMahon, or at least let him back into the fold. When Vince McMahon sees dollar signs, he'll bring you in. I mean, Ultimate Warrior – I mean, Wade Keller's talked about it plenty, but if you want to really look into what he did with the WWE as far as, like, making them angry and the things he said and everything he's – you know, I don't want to go into it right now, but, like, Vince McMahon just brought him in. You know, everybody – Bruno brought him in, everybody. But I don't know, Triple H, you know, might be building these bridges for superstars of the past, but he also might be holding grudges, especially with his contemporaries. And him and Jericho have never seemed to – they have a love-hate relationship. So, you know, Jericho doing this cruise, and I think he got ROH involved in everything. And beyond that, maybe he's going to be a spokesman for New Japan. And that might not be a bad thing. I don't know.
Well, yeah, spokesman for New Japan in America would probably be ideal. You know, I mean, New Japan would probably bend over backwards to see that happen. going forward for New Japan, I shouldn't just assume this, but it seems like Ring of Honor pretty much has a stronghold on, you know, a distant second as far as popularity in the United States goes as far as pro wrestling. This I can honestly see them surpassing Ring of Honor as far as popularity goes. And I'm not saying they're going to challenge WWE because that's virtually impossible, but I think they will definitely be like a real, you know, something different for people who are disenchanted with what the WWE is doing. You know, you definitely have your Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, who's probably as close to New Japan as anyone, but doesn't have the, mm-hmm. The distribution or clearances. This can only be good for New Japan. And like Rick, you said, if this leads to more people coming over, especially Daniel Bryan, I mean, that would be huge. Not that this isn't, but they would definitely be making some solid inroads as far as the United States audience goes. So, guys, before we wrap up, any final thoughts on anything as far as the Jericho situation?
Let me just say this real quick to your last point. I think Ring of Honor might be in some real trouble here when you sort of break it down, because PWG is for like the elitist, you know, that real special group. Sure, New Japan right. is doing, you know, new stuff. Ring of Honor just reminds me of like that rock band that's been traveling with the same set for like 15 years. Nothing different. Nothing's changed. And if you want that style of wrestling, you can kind of get it from like your NXT. And they don't have a subscription pay-per-view service for $10 a month like New Japan. I'm really interested to see what the future actually holds for Ring of Honor, because I don't know that they fill any niche like they used to.
Well, and kind of going back to Ring of Honor, and I don't have the answer to this, and maybe you do, but what was the logic behind Cody Rhodes signing with Ring of Honor exclusively?
Beats me, but like I assume it'd be to, you know, siphon off that WWE audience, but I don't know if he's necessarily the guy that would do it. And look, the coolest thing about Ring of Honor shows tends to be the New Japan, you know, crossover.
Right. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I just didn't know if you had heard anything, like what was the, you know, the reasoning behind the decision to do that, because I would think it, you know, if New Japan has some sort of, you know, 3 month, 6 month plan, whatever it is, where they're going to start bringing in, you know, big names like this, I would think Cody Rhodes might be kicking himself for, you know, for making that deal. Rick, anything to add before we wrap up?
Yeah, I used to be, I still am a Ring of Honor fan to a certain extent, but back in like 2005 to 2009, like when Samoa Joe was just during his championship and when he was ending his championship, when Morishima came in, when all this was going on, I was just a huge Ring of Honor fan. I would always look for whatever weekly deal they had on for their DVDs, make sure to get them. And I still rewatch some of those old Ring of Honor DVDs, you know, even after CM Punk left. I'm not just talking about those glory days, but even post CM Punk, I still thought it was a great promotion. And when I still inherently call him Bryan Danielson when he was champion, and even after that, I just, that Ring of Honor and this current Ring of Honor, obviously they can't be the same thing because they've lost some stars and they have different owners and everything like that. But I feel like I'm more in tune with New Japan as far as their atmosphere goes. It reminds me more of the Ring of Honor I liked back in the day than the current Ring of Honor does. You know, New Japan comes off as like, especially if you watch it, like New Japan had a Access TV special where it was Okada versus Cody Rhodes, like you're just talking about. And that that special, the two-night event, reminded me of when I first discovered ECW, where it was a kind of an alien promotion in the sense where I've never heard of it. The crowd atmosphere was different and the style was – it's exciting and new. And this returning rock band, like Robert said, is getting a little old. And I hope they figure out a way to bring fans like me and you guys back.
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult, though, going forward, obviously not knowing what New Japan has in store, but this is definitely a step in the right direction for them. So, all right, guys, let's wrap it up with that. Robert, if you want to go ahead and give our listeners info on how they can follow you and anything else that you want to plug.
Yeah, you can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Rob N. Vallejos, R-O-B-M-V-A-L-L-E-J-O-S.
All right. And Rick, once again, I appreciate you filling in on last minute notice. It was fun. So, and just so you guys are aware, you can follow me on Twitter at FightChampBlog, and you can read all my columns, as always, at MMATorch.com. So for Rick and Robert, my name is Mike Grocki, and we will be back next week for another episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell audio show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.